Do you feel a shiver up your spine from fear? Yes, it's another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind. Amp up your imagination and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
The Blue Lenses by Daphne du Maurier. This was the day for the bandages to be removed and the blue lenses fitted. Marta West put her hand up to her eyes and felt the crepe binder and the layer upon layer of cotton wool beneath. Patience would be rewarded at last. The days had passed into weeks since her operation, and she had lain there suffering no physical discomfort, but only the anonymity of darkness, a negative feeling that the world and the life around was passing her by. During the first few days, there had been pain, mercifully allayed by drugs, and then the sharpness of this wore down, dissolved, and she was left with a sense of great fatigue, which they assured her was reaction after shock. As for the operation itself, it had been successful. Here was definite promise, 100% successful. "You will see," the surgeon told her, more clearly than ever before. "But how can you tell?" she urged, desiring her slender thread of faith to be reinforced. "Because we examined your eyes when you were under the anesthetic," he replied, "and again since, when we put you under for a second time. We would not lie to you, Mrs. West." This reassurance came from them two or three times a day, and she had to steel herself to patience as the weeks wore by, so that she referred to the matter perhaps only once every 24 hours, and then by way of a trap, to catch them unawares. "Don't throw the roses out. I should like to see them," she would say, and the day nurse would be surprised into the admission. "They'll be over before you can do that," which meant that she would not see this week. Actual dates were never mentioned. Nobody said, "On the 14th of the month, you will have your eyes." And the subterfuge continued, the pretense that she did not mind and was content to wait. Even Jim, her husband, was now classed in the category of them, the staff of the hospital, and no longer treated as a confidant. Once long ago, every qualm and apprehension had been admitted and shared. This was before the operation. Then, fearful of pain and blindness, she had clung to him and said, "What if I never see again? What will happen to me?" Picturing herself as helpless and maimed. And Jim, whose anxiety was no less harsh than hers, would answer, "Whatever comes, we'll go through it together." Now, for no known reason, except that darkness, perhaps, had made her more sensitive, she was shy to discuss her eyes with him. The touch of his hand was the same as it had ever been in his kiss and the warmth of his voice, but always, during these days of waiting, she had the seed of fear that he, like the staff at the hospital, was being too kind. The kindness of those who knew, towards the one who must not be told. Therefore, when at last it happened, when at his evening visit the surgeon said, "Your lenses will be fitted tomorrow," surprise was greater than joy. She could not say anything, and he left the room before she could thank him. It was really true. The long agony had ended. She permitted herself only a last feeler before the day nurse went off duty. "They'll take some getting used to, and hurt a bit at first?" Her statement of fact, put as a careless question, but the voice of the woman who attended her through so many weary days replied, "You won't know you've got them, Mrs. West." Such a calm, comfortable voice, and the way she shifted the pillows and held the glass to the patient's lips. The hand smelled faintly of the morning French fern soap with which she washed her. These things gave confidence and implied that she could not lie. "Tomorrow I shall see you," said Marta West, and the nurse with a cheerful laugh that could be heard sometimes down the corridor outside answered, "Yes, I'll give you your first shock." It was a strange thought, how memories of coming into the nursing home were now blunted. The staff who had received her were dim shadows. The room assigned to her, where she still lay like a wooden box built only to entrap, even the surgeon, brisk and efficient, during those two rapid consultations when he had recommended an immediate operation, was a voice rather than a presence. He gave his orders, and the orders were carried out, and it was difficult to reconcile this bird of passage with a person who, though several weeks ago, had asked her to surrender herself to him, who had in fact worked this miracle upon the membranes and the tissues which were her living eyes. "Aren't you feeling excited?" This was the low, soft voice of her night nurse, who, more than the rest of them, understood what she had endured. Nurse Brand, by day, exuded a daytime brightness. She was a person of sunlight, of bearing and fresh flowers, of admitting visitors. The weather she described in the world outside appeared to be her own creation. A real scorcher, she would say, flinging open windows, and her patient would soon sense the cool uniform, the starched cap, which somehow toned down the penetrating heat. Or else she might hear the steady fall of rain and feel the slight chill accompanying it. This is going to please the gardener, but it'll put paid to Matron's Day on the river. Meals, too, even the dullest of lunches, were made to appear delicacies through her method of introduction. A morsel of brie au beurre, she would suggest, happily whetting reluctant appetite. And the boiled fish that followed must be eaten for all its tastelessness, because otherwise it would seem to let down Nurse Brand, who had recommended it. Apple fritters, you can manage to, I'm sure. And the tongue began to roll, the imaginary fritter crisp as a flake and sugared, which in reality had a languid, leathery substance. And so her cheerful optimism broke no discontent. It would be offensive to complain, lacking in backbone to admit, "Let me just lie, I don't want anything." The night brought consolation and Nurse Ansel. She did not expect courage. At first, during pain, it had been Nurse Ansel who had administered the drugs. It was she who had smoothed the pillows and held the glass to the parched lips. Then, with the passing weeks, there had been the gentle voice and the quiet encouragement. "It will soon pass. This waiting is the worst." At night, the patient had only to touch the bell, and in a moment, Nurse Ansel was by the bed. "Can't sleep? I know, it's wretched for you. I'll give you just 2.5 grains, and the night won't seem so long." How compassionate, that smooth and silken voice, the imagination making fantasies through enforced rest and idleness, pictured some reality with Nurse Ansel that was not hospital. A holiday abroad, perhaps, for the three of them and Jim playing golf with an unspecified male companion, leaving her, Marta, to wander with Nurse Ansel. All she could do was faultless. She never annoyed. The small shared intimacies of nighttime brought a bond between nurse and patient that vanished with the day. And when she went off duty, at 7:55 in the morning, she would whisper, "Until this evening," the very whisper stimulating anticipation, as though 8 o'clock that night would not be clocking in but an assignation. Nurse Ansel understood complaint when Marta West said wearily, "It's been such a long day." Her answering, "Has it?" implied that for her too the day had dragged, that in some hostel she had tried to sleep and failed, that now only did she hope to come alive. It was with a special secret sympathy that she would announce the evening visitor. "Here is someone you want to see a little earlier than usual." The tone suggesting that Jim was not the husband of 10 years, but a troubadour, a lover, someone whose bouquet of flowers had been plucked in an enchanted garden and now brought to a balcony. "What gorgeous lilies!" The exclamation, half a breath and half a sigh, so that Marta West imagined exotic dragon-petaled beauties growing to leaves, and Nurse Ansel, a little priestess kneeling. Then shyly the voice would murmur, "Good evening, Mr. West. Mrs. West is waiting for you." She would hear the gentle closing of the door, the tiptoeing out with the lilies, and the almost soundless return, the scent of the flowers filling the room. It must have been during the 5th week that Marta West had tentatively suggested, first to Nurse Ansel and then to her husband, that perhaps when she returned home, the night nurse might go with them for the 1st week. It would chime with Nurse Ansel's own holiday. Just a week, just so that Marta West could settle to home again. "Would you like me to?" Reserve lay in the voice, yet promise too. "I would. It's going to be so difficult at first, the patient, not knowing what she meant by difficult. Sarasov is helpless still in spite of the new lenses, and needing the protection and the reassurance that up to the present only Nurse Ansel had given her. Jim, what about it? His comment was somewhat between surprise and indulgence. Surprise that his wife considered a nurse a person in her own right, and indulgence because it was the whim of a sick woman. At least that was how it seemed to Marta West. And later, when the evening visit was over and he had gone home, she said to the night nurse, I can't make out whether my husband thought it is a good idea or not. The answer was quiet yet assuring. Don't worry, Mr. West is reconciled. But reconciled to what? The change in routine? Three people around the table? Conversation? The unusual status of a guest who, devoting herself to her hostess, must be paid? Though the last would not be mentioned, but glossed over. At the end of a week, in an envelope? Aren't you feeling excited? Nurse Ansel, by the pillow, touched the bandages. And it was the warmth in the voice, the certainty that only a few hours now would bring revelation, which stifled at last all lingering doubt of success. The operation had not failed. Tomorrow she would see once more. In a way, said Marta West, it's like being born again. I've forgotten how the world looks. Such a wonderful world, murmured Nurse Ansel, and you've been patient for so long. The sympathetic hand expressed condemnation of all those who had insisted upon bandage through the waiting weeks. Greater indulgence might have been granted had Nurse Ansel herself been in command and waved a wand. It's queer, said Marta West. Tomorrow you won't be a voice to me anymore. You'll be a person. Aren't I a person now? A note of gentle teasing, of pretended reproach, which was all part of the communication between them, so soothing to the patient. This must surely, when the sight came back, be foregone. Yes, of course, but it's bound to be different. I don't see why. Ever knowing that she was dark and small, for so Nurse Ansel had described herself, Marta West must be prepared for surprise at the first encounter, the tilt of the head, the slant of the eyes, or perhaps some unexpected facial form, like too large a mouth, too many teeth. Look, feel, and not for the first time. Nurse Ansel took her patient's hand and passed it over her own face. A little embarrassing, perhaps, because it implied surrender. The patient's hand, a captive Marta West, withdrawing it, said, with a laugh, it doesn't tell me a thing. Sleep, then. Tomorrow will come too soon. There came the familiar routine of the bell, but within reach, the last-minute drink, the pill, and then the soft, good night, Mrs. West, ring if you want me. Thank you, good night. There was always a slight sense of loss, of loneliness, as the door closed and she went away, and a feeling of jealousy, too, because there were other patients who received these same mercies and who, in pain, would also ring their bells. When she awoke, and this often happened in the small hours, Marta West would no longer capture Jim at home, lonely on his pillow, but would have an image of Nurse Ansel, seated perhaps by someone's bed, bending to give comfort, and this alone would make her reach for the bell and press her thumb upon it and say, when the door opened, were you having a nap? I never nap on duty. She would be seated then, in the cubbyhole midway along the passage, perhaps drinking tea or entering particulars of charts into a ledger, or standing beside a patient as she now stood beside Marta West. I can't find my handkerchief. Here it is, under your pillow all the time. A pat on the shoulder, and this in itself was a sort of delicacy. A few moments of talk to prolong companionship, and then she would be gone to answer other bells and other requests. Well, we can't complain of the weather. Now it was the day itself. And Nurse Brand, coming in like the first breeze of morning, a hand on a barometer, set fair. All ready for the great event? She asked. Well, you must get a move on and keep your prettiest nightie to greet your husband. It was her operation in reverse. This time in the same room, though not a stretcher, but only the deft hand of the surgeon with Nurse Brand to help him. First came the disappearance of the crepe, the lifting of the bandages and lint, the very slight prick of an injection, to dull feeling. Then he did something to her eyelids. There was no pain. Whatever he did was cold, like the slipping of ice where the bandages had been, yet soothing too. Now, don't be disappointed, he said. You won't know any difference for about half an hour. Everything will seem shadowed, then it will gradually clear. I want you to lie quietly during that time. I understand. I won't move. The longed-for moment must not be too sudden. This made sense. The dark lenses fitted inside her lids were temporary for the first few days. Then they would be removed and others fitted. How much shall I see? The question dared at last. Everything. But not immediately in color. Just like wearing sunglasses on a bright day. Rather pleasant. His cheerful laugh gave confidence, and when he and Nurse Brand had left the room, she lay back again, waiting for the fog to clear and for the summer day to break upon her vision, however subdued, however softened by the lenses. Little by little, the mist dissolved. The first object was angular, a wardrobe, then a chair, then moving her head, the gradual forming of the window's shape, the vases on the sill, flowers Jim had brought her, sounds from the street outside merged with shapes, and what had seemed sharp before was now in harmony. She thought to herself, I wonder if I can cry. I wonder if the lenses will keep back tears. But feeling the blessing of sight restored, she felt the tears as well. Nothing to be ashamed of. One or two which were easily brushed away. All was in focus now. Flowers, the wash basin, the glass with a thermometer in it, her dressing gown. Wonder and relief were so great that they excluded thought. They weren't lying to me, she thought. It happened. It's true. The texture of the blanket covering her, so often felt, could now be seen as well. Color was not important. The dim light caused by the blue lenses enhanced the charm, the softness of all she saw. It seemed to her, rejoicing in form and shape, that color would never matter. There was time enough for color. The blue symmetry of vision itself was all important. To see, to feel, to blend the two together, it was indeed rebirth, the discovery of a world long lost to her. There seemed to be no hurry now. Gazing about the small room and dwelling upon every aspect of it was richness, something to savor. Hours could be spent just looking at the room and feeling it, traveling through the window and to the windows of the houses opposite. Even a prisoner, she decided, could find comfort in this cell. If he had been blinded first and had recovered his sight, she heard Nurse Brand's voice outside and turned her head to watch the opening door. Well, are we happy once more? Smiling, she saw the figure dressed in uniform come into the room bearing a tray, her glass of milk upon it. Yet, incongruous perhaps, the head and the uniform cap was not a woman's head at all. The thing bearing down upon her was a cow on a woman's body. The frilled cap was perched upon wide horns. The eyes were large and gentle, but cow's eyes, the nostrils broad and humid, and the way she stood there breathing was the way a cow stood placidly in pasture, taking the day as it came, content, unmoved. Feeling a bit strange? The laugh was a woman's laugh, a nurse's laugh, Nurse Brand's laugh, and she put the tray down on the cupboard beside the bed. The patient said nothing. She shut her eyes, then opened them again. The cow in the nurse's uniform was with her still. Confess now, said Nurse Brown. You wouldn't know you had the lenses in, except for the color. It was important to gain time. The patient stretched out her hand carefully for the glass of milk. She sipped the milk slowly. The mask must be worn on purpose. Perhaps it was some kind of experiment connected with the fitting of the lenses, though how it was supposed to work she could not imagine. And it was surely taking rather a risk to spring such a surprise, and to people weaker than herself, who might have undergone the same operations, downright cruel? I see very plainly, she said at last, at least I think I do. Nurse Brand stood watching her with folded arms. The broad uniform figure was much as Marta West had imagined it. But that cow's head tilted? The ridiculous frill of the cap perched on the horns? Where did the head join the body? If the mask, in fact, was what it was. You don't sound too sure of yourself, said Nurse Brand. Don't say you're disappointed. After all we've done for you. The laugh was cheerful as usual, but she could be chewing grass, the slow jaws moving from side to side. I'm sure of myself, answered her patient, but I'm not so sure of you. Is it a trick? Is what a trick? The way you look, your face. Vision was not so dimmed by the blue lenses that she could not distinguish a change of expression. The cow's jaw distinctly dropped. Really, Mrs. West? This time the laugh was not so cordial. Surprise was very evident.
I'm as the good God made me. I dare say he might have made a better job of it. The nurse, the cow, moved from the bedside toward the window and drew the curtains more sharply back so that the full light filled the room. There was no visible drone to the mask that had blended to the body. Marta West saw how the cow, if she stood at bay, would lower her horns. I didn't mean to offend you, she said, but it is just a little strange. You see, she was spared explanation because the door opened and the surgeon came into the room. At least the surgeon's voice was recognizable as he called, "Hello, how goes it?" And his figure in the dark coat and the sponge bag trousers was all that an eminent surgeon should be. But that terrier's head, ears pricked, the inquisitive, searching glance. In a moment, surely, he would yap, and a tail wag swiftly. This time the patient laughed. The effect was ludicrous. It must be a joke. It was. It had to be. But why go to such expensive trouble? And what in the end was gained by the deception? She checked her laugh abruptly as she saw the terrier turn to the cow. The two communicate with each other soundlessly. Then the cow shrugged its two ample shoulders. "Mrs. West thinks us a bit of a joke," she said, but the nurse's voice was not overpleased. "I'm not all for that," said the surgeon. "It would never do if she took a dislike to us, would it?" Then he came and put his hand out to his patient and bent close to observe her eyes. She lay very still. He wore no mask either, none at least that she could distinguish. The ears were pricked, the sharp nose questing. He was even marked, one ear black, the other white. She pictured him at the entrance to a fox lair, sniffing, then quick on the scent, scuffing down the tunnel, intent upon the job for which he was trained. "Your name ought to be Jack Russell," she said aloud. "I beg your pardon?" He had straightened himself out, but still stood beside the bed, and the bright eyes had a penetrating quality. One ear cocked. "I mean," Marta West searched for words, "the name seems to suit you better than your own." She felt confused. Mr. Edmund Greaves, with all the letters after him on the plate in Harley Street, what must he think of her? "I know a James Russell," he said to her, "but he's an orthopedic surgeon and breaks your bones. Do you feel I've done that to you?" His voice was brisk, but he sounded a little surprised, as Nurse Brand had done. The gratitude which was owed to their skill was not forthcoming. "No, no, indeed," said the patient hastily. "Nothing is broken at all. I'm in no pain. I see clearly, almost too clearly, in fact." "That's as it should be," he said, and the laugh that followed resembled a short, sharp bark. "Well, nurse," he went on, "the patient can do everything within reason except remove the lenses. You've warned her, I suppose?" "I was about to, sir, when you came in." Mr. Greaves turned his pointed terrier nose to Marta West. "I'll be in on Thursday," he said, "to change the lenses. In the meantime, it's just a question of washing out the eyes with a solution 3 times a day. They'll do for you. Don't touch them yourself. And above all, don't fiddle with the lenses. A patient did that once and lost his sight. He never recovered it." "If you tried that," the terrier seemed to say, "you would get what you deserved. Better not make the attempt. My teeth are sharp." "I understand," said the patient slowly. She could not now demand an explanation. Instinct warned her that he would not understand. The terrier was saying something to the cow, giving instructions. Such a sharp staccato sentence, and the foolish head nodded in answer. Surely on a hot day the flies would bother her, or would the frilled cap keep insects away? As they moved to the door, the patient made a last attempt. "Will the permanent lenses," she asked, "be the same as these?" "Exactly the same," yapped the surgeon, "except that they won't be tinted. You'll see the natural color until Thursday then." He was gone, and the nurse with him. She could hear the murmur of voices outside the door. What happened now? If it was really some kind of test, did they remove their masks instantly? It seemed to Marta West of immense importance that she should find this out. The trick was not truly fair. It was a misuse of confidence. She slipped out of bed and went to the door. She could hear the surgeon say, 1.5 grains. She's a little overwrought. It's a reaction, of course." Bravely, she flung open the door. They were standing there in the passage, wearing the mask still. They turned to look at her in the sharp, bright eyes of the terrier. The deep-set eyes of the cow both held reproach, as though the patient, by confronting them, had committed a breach of etiquette. "Do you want anything, Mrs. West?" asked Nurse Brand. Marta West stared beyond them down the corridor. The whole floor was in the deception. A maid carrying dustpan and brush, coming from the room next door, had a weasel's head upon her small body, and the nurse advancing from the other side was a little prancing kitten, her cap coquettish on her furry curls, the doctor beside her a proud lion. Even the porter arriving at that moment in the lift opposite carried a boar's head between his shoulders. He lifted out luggage upon a boar's heavy grunt. The first sharp prick of fear came to Marta West. How could they have known she would open the door at that minute? How could they have arranged to walk down the corridor wearing masks? The other nurses and the other doctor and the maid appear out of the room next door, and the porter come up in the lift. Something of her fear must have shown in her face, for Nurse Brand, the cow, took hold of her and led her back to her room. "Are you feeling all right, Mrs. West?" she asked anxiously. Marta West climbed slowly into bed. If it was a conspiracy, what was it all for? Were the other patients to be deceived as well? "I'm rather tired," she said. "I'd like to sleep." "That's right," said Nurse Brand. "You got a wee bit excited." She was mixing something in the medicine glass, and this time as Marta West took the glass, her hand trembled. Could a cow see clearly how to mix medicine? Supposing she made a mistake? "What are you giving me?" she asked. "A sedative," answered the cow. "Buttercups and daisies, lush green grass." Imagination was strong enough to taste all three in the mixture. The patient shuddered. She lay down on her pillow, and Nurse Brand drew the curtain close. "Now just relax," she said, "and when you wake up, you'll feel so much better." The heavy head stretched forward, and in a moment it would surely open its jaw and move. The sedative acted swiftly. Already a drowsy sensation filled the patient's limbs. Soon, peaceful darkness came, but she awoke, not to the sanity she had hoped for, but to lunch brought in by the kitten. Nurse Brand was off duty. "How long must it go on for?" asked Marta West. She resigned herself to the trick. A dreamless sleep had restored energy and some measure of confidence. If it was somehow necessary to the recovery of her eyes, or even if they did it for some unfathomable reason of their own, it was their business. "How do you mean, Mrs. West?" asked the kitten, smiling. Such a flighty little thing with its pursed-up mouth, and even as it spoke, it put a hand to its cap. "This test on my eyes," said the patient, uncovering the boiled chicken on her plate. "I don't see the point of it, making yourself such guise. What is the object?" The kitten, serious, if a kitten could be serious, continued to stare at her. "I'm sorry, Mrs. West," she said. "I don't follow you. Did you tell Nurse Brand you couldn't see properly yet?" "It's not that I can't see," replied Marta West. "I see perfectly well. The chair is a chair. The table is a table. I'm about to eat boiled chicken. But why do you look like a kitten, and a tabby kitten, at that?" Perhaps she sounded ungracious. It was hard to keep her voice steady. The nurse, Marta West, remembered the voice. It was Nurse Sweeting, and the name suited her, drew back from the trolley table. "I'm sorry," she said. "If I don't come up to scratch, I've never been called a cat before." Scratch was good. The claws were out already. She might purr to the lion in the corridor, but she was not going to purr to Marta West. "I'm not making it up," said the patient. "I see what I see. You are a cat. If you like, and Nurse Brand's a cow." This time the insult must sound deliberate. Nurse Sweeting had fine whiskers to her mouth. The whiskers bristled. "If you please, Mrs. West," she said, "will you at least eat your chicken and ring the bell when you are ready for the next course?" She stalked from the room. If she had a tail, thought Marta West, it would not be wagging like Mr. Greaves, but twitching angrily. No, they could not be wearing masks. The kitten's surprise and resentment had been too genuine, and the staff of the hospital could only possibly put on such an act for one patient. For Marta West alone, the expense would be too great. The fault must lie in the lenses, then, the lenses. By their very nature, by some quality beyond the layman's understanding, must transform the person who was perceived through them. A sudden thought struck her, and pushing the trolley table aside, she climbed out of bed and went over to the dressing table. Her own face stared back at her from the looking glass. The dark lenses concealed the eyes, but the face was at least her own. "Thank heaven for that," she said to herself, but it swung her back to thoughts of trickery. That her own face should seem unchanged through the lenses suggested a plot, and that her first idea of masks had been the right one. But why? Why did they gain by it? Could there be a conspiracy among them to drive her mad? She dismissed the idea at once. It was too fanciful. This was a reputable London nursing home, and the staff was well known. The surgeon had operated on royalty. Besides, if they wanted to send her mad, or kill her even, it would be simple enough with drugs, or with anesthetics. They could have given her too much anesthetic during the operation, and just let her die. No one would take the roundabout way of dressing up staff and doctors in animal masks.
She would try one further proof. She stood by the window, the curtain concealing her, and watched for passerbys. For the moment, there was no one in the street. It was the lunch hour, and traffic was slack. Then at the other end of the street, a taxi crossed, too far away for her to see the driver's head. She waited. The porter came out from the nursing home and stood on the steps, looking up and down. His boar's head was clearly visible. He did not count, though. He could be part of the plot. A van drew near, but she could not see the driver. Yes, he slowed as he went by the nursing home and craned from his seat, and she saw the squat frog's head, the bulging eyes. Sick at heart, she left the window and climbed back into bed. She had no further appetite and pushed away her plate, the rest of the chicken untasted. She did not ring her bell, and after a while the door opened. It was not the kitten. It was the little maid with the weasel's head. "Will you have plum tart or ice cream, madam?" she asked. Marta West, her eyes half closed, shook her head. The weasel, shyly edging forward to take the tray, said, "Cheese then, and coffee to follow?" The head joined the neck without any fastening. It could not be a mask, unless some designer, some genius, had invented masks that merged with the body, blending fabric to skin. "Coffee only," said Marta West. The weasel vanished, another knock at the door, and the kitten was back again, her back arched, her fluff flying. She plonked the coffee down without a word, and Marta West, irritated, for surely if anyone was to show annoyance, it should be herself, said sharply, "Shall I pour you some milk in the saucer?" The kitten turned. "A joke?" "A joke, Mrs. West," she said, "and I can take a laugh with anyone, but I can't stick rudeness." "Meow," said Marta West. The kitten left the room. No one, not even the weasel, came to remove the coffee. The patient was in disgrace. She did not care. If the staff of the nursing home thought they could win this battle, they were mistaken. She went to the window again. An elderly cod, leaning on two sticks, was being helped into a waiting car by the boar-headed porter. It could not be a plot. They could not know she was watching them. Marta went to the telephone and asked the exchange to put her through to her husband's office. She remembered a moment afterwards that he would still be at lunch. Nevertheless, she got the number, and as luck had it, he was there. "Jim? Jim, darling?" "Yes?" The relief to hear the loved, familiar voice. She lay back on the bed, the receiver to ear. "Darling, when can you get here?" "Not before this evening, I'm afraid. It's one hell of a day, one thing after another. Well, how did it go? Is everything okay?" "Not exactly." "What do you mean? Can't you see? Greaves hasn't bungled it, has he?" How was she to explain what had happened to her? It sounded so foolish over the telephone. "Yes, I can see perfectly. It's just that all the nurses look like animals, and Greaves, too. He's a fox terrier. One of those little Jack Russells they put down the fox's hole." "What on earth are you talking about?" He was saying something to his secretary. At the same time, something about another appointment, and she knew from the tone of his voice that he was busy, very busy. She had chosen the worst time to ring him up. "What do you mean about Jack Russell?" he repeated. Marta West knew it was no use. She must wait till he came, then she would try to explain everything, and he would be able to find out for himself what lay behind it. "Oh, never mind," she said. "I will tell you later." "I'm sorry," he told her, "but I really am in a tearing hurry. If the lenses don't help you, tell somebody. Tell the nurses, the matron." "Yes," she said, "yes." Then she rang off. She put down the telephone. She picked up a magazine, one left behind at some time or other, by Jim himself, she supposed. She was glad to find that reading did not hurt her eyes. Nor did the blue lenses make any difference, for the photographs of men and women looked normal, as they always had done. Wedding groups, social occasions, debutantes, all were as usual. It was only here, in the nursing home itself, and in the street outside, that they were different. It was much late in the afternoon that matron called in to have a word with her. She knew it was matron because of her clothes, but inevitably now, without surprise, she observed the sheep's head. "I hope you're quite comfortable, Mrs. West." A note of gentle inquiry in the voice, a suspicion of a bah. "Yes, thank you." Marta West spoke guardedly. It would not do to ruffle a matron. Even if the whole affair was some gigantic plot, it would be better not to aggravate her. "The lenses fit well?" "Very well." "So glad. It was a nasty operation."
and you stood the period of waiting so very well. That's it, thought the patient. Butter me up. Part of the game, no doubt. Only a few days, Mr. Grief said, and then you will have them altered and the permanent ones fitted. Yes, so he said. It's rather disappointing not to observe color, isn't it? As things are, it's a relief. The retort slipped out before she could check herself. The matron smoothed her dress. And if you only knew, thought the patient, what you look like, with that tape under your sheep's chin, and you would understand what I mean. Mrs. West, the matron seemed uncomfortable and turned her sheep's head away from the woman in the bed. Mrs. West, I hope you won't mind what I'm going to say, but our nurses do a fine job here, and we're all very proud of them. They work long hours, as you know, and it's not really very kind to mock them, although I'm sure you intended it in fun. Bah, bah. Bleed away, Marta West tightened her lips. Is it because I called Nurse Sweeting a kitten? I don't know what you called her, Mrs. West, but she was quite distressed. She came to me in the office nearly crying. Spitting, you mean? Spitting and scratching? Those capable little hands are really claws. It won't happen again. She was determined not to say more. It was not her fault. She had not asked for lenses that deformed, for trickery, for make-believe. It must come very expensive, she added, to run a nursing home like this. It is, said the matron. Said the sheep. It can only be done because of the excellence of the staff and the cooperation of all our patients. The remark was intended to strike home. Even a sheep can turn. Matron, said Marta West, don't let's fence with each other. What is the object of it all? The object of what, Mrs. West? This tomfoolery, this dressing up. There, she had said it. To enforce her argument, she pointed at the matron's cap. Why pick on that particular disguise? It's not even funny. There was silence. The matron, who had made as if to sit down to continue her chat, changed her mind. She moved down to the door. We, who were trained at St. Hilda's, are proud of our badge, she said. I hope when you leave us in a few days, Mrs. West, that you will look back on us with greater tolerance than you appear to have now. She left the room. Marta West picked up the magazine she had thrown down, but the matter was dull. She closed her eyes. She opened them again. She closed them once more. If the chair become a mushroom and the table a haystack, then the blame could have been put upon the lenses. Why was it only people who had changed? What was so wrong with people? She kept her eyes shut when her tea was brought her, and when the voice said pleasantly, "Some flowers for you, Mrs. West." She did not even open them, but waited for the owner of the voice to leave the room. The flowers were carnations. The card was Jim's. And the message on it said, "Cheer up. We're not as bad as we seem." She smiled and buried her face in the flowers. Nothing false about them. Nothing strange about the scent. Carnations were carnations. Fragrant, graceful. Even the nurse on duty, who came to put them in water, could not irritate her with her pony's head. After all, it was a trim little pony with a white star on its forehead. It would do well in the ring. "Thank you," smiled Marta West. The curious day dragged on, and she waited restlessly for 8 o'clock. She washed and changed her nightgown and did her hair. She drew her own curtains and switched on the bedside lamp. A strange feeling of nervousness had come upon her. She realized so strange had been the day that she had not once thought about Nurse Ansel. Dear, comforting, bewitching Nurse Ansel. Nurse Ansel, who was due to come on duty at 8. Was she also in on the conspiracy? If she was, then Marta West would have a showdown. Nurse Ansel would never lie. She would go up to her and put her hands on her shoulders and take the mask in her two hands and say to her, "There, now take it off. You won't deceive me." But if it was the lenses, if all the time it was the lenses that were at fault, how was she to explain it? She was sitting at the dressing table, putting some cream on her face, and the door must have opened without her being aware. But she heard the well-known voice, the soft, beguiling voice, and it said to her, "I nearly came before. I didn't dare. You would have thought me foolish." It slid slowly into view. The long snake's head, the twisting neck, the pointed barbed tongue swiftly thrusting and swiftly withdrawn. It came into view over her shoulders through the looking glass. Marta West did not move. Only her hand mechanically continued to cream her cheek. The snake was not motionless. It turned and twisted all the time, as though examining the pots of cream, the scent, the powder. "How does it feel to see yourself again?" Nurse Ansel's voice emerging from the head seemed all the more grotesque and horrible, and the very fact that as she spoke the darting tongue spoke to paralyzed action. Marta West felt sickness rise in her stomach, choking her. A suddenly physical reaction proved too strong. She turned away, but as she did so, the steady hands of the nurse gripped her. She suffered herself to be led to her bed. She was lying down, eyes closed, the nausea passing. Poor dear. What had they been giving you? Was it the sedative? I saw it on your chart. And the gentle voice, so soothing and so calm, could only belong to one who understood. The patient did not open her eyes. She did not dare. She lay there on the bed waiting. It's been too much for you, said the voice. They should have kept you quiet the first day. Did you have visitors? No. Nevertheless, you should have rested. You look really pale. We can't have Mr. West seeing you like this. I've half a mind to telephone him to stay away. No, please. I want to see him. I must see him. Fear made her open her eyes, but directly she did so the sickness gripped her again. For the snake's head, longer than before, was twisting out of its nurse's collar. For the first time, she saw the hooded eye, a pin's head hidden. She put her hand over her mouth to stifle her cry. A noise came from Nurse Ansel, expressing disquiet. Something has turned you very sick, she said. It can't be the sedative. You've often had before. What was the dinner this evening? Steamed fish. I wasn't hungry. I wonder if it was fresh. I'll see if someone has complained. Meanwhile, lie still, dear, and don't upset yourself. The door quietly opened and closed again, and Marta West, disobeying instructions, slipped from her bed and seized the first weapon that came to hand, her nail scissors. Then she returned to her bed again, her heart beating fast, the scissors concealed beneath the sheet. Revulsion had been too great. She must defend herself. Should a snake approach her, now she was certain that what was happening was real, was true. Some evil force encompassed the nursing home and its inhabitants. The matron, the nurses, the visiting doctors, her surgeon, they were all caught up in it. They were all partners in some gigantic crime, the purpose of which could not be understood. Here in Upper Watling Street, the malevolent plot was in process of being hatched, and she, Marta West, was one of the pawns. In some way, they were to use her as an instrument. One thing was very certain. She must not let them know that she suspected them. She must try and behave with Nurse Ansel as she had done hitherto. One slip and she was lost. She must pretend to be better. If she let sickness overcome her, Nurse Ansel might bend over her with that snake's head, that darting tongue. The door opened and she was back. Marta West clenched her hands under the sheet. Then she forced a smile. What a nuisance I am, she said. I felt giddy, but I'm better now. The gliding snake held a bottle in her hand. She came over to the wash basin and, taking the medicine glass, poured out 3 drops. This should settle it, Mrs. West, she said, and fear gripped the patient once again, for surely the words themselves constituted a threat. This should settle it? Settle what? Settle her finish? The liquid had no color, but that meant nothing. She took the medicine glass handed to her and invented a subterfuge. Could you find me a clean handkerchief in the drawer there? Of course. The snake turned its head, as it did so Marta West, poured the contents of the glass onto the floor. Then, fascinated, repelled, she watched the twisting head peer into the contents of the dressing table drawer, search for a handkerchief, and bring it back again. Marta West held her breath as she drew near the bed, and this time she noticed that the net was not the smooth, glow-warm neck that it had seemed on the first encounter, but had scales upon it, zigzagged. Oddly, the nurse's cap was not ill-fitting. It did not perch incongruously as had the caps of kitten, sheep, and cow. She took the handkerchief. You embarrass me, said the voice, staring at me so hard. Are you trying to read my thoughts? Marta West didn't answer. The question might be a trap. Tell me, the voice continued. Are you disappointed? Do I look as you expected me to look? It's still a trap. She must be careful. I think you do, she said slowly, but it's difficult to tell with a cap. I can't see your hair. Nurse Ansel laughed, a low, soft laugh that had been so alluring during the long weeks of blindness. She put up her hand, and in a moment, the whole snake's head was revealed. The flat, broad top, the telltale adder's V. Do you approve? She asked. Marta West shrank back against her pillow, yet once again, she forced herself to smile. Very pretty, she said, very pretty indeed. The cap was replaced. The long neck wiggled and then deceived. It took the medicine glass from the patient's hand and put it back upon the wash basin. It did not know everything. When I go home with you, said Nurse Ansel, I needn't wear uniform, that is, if you don't want me to. You see, you'll be a private patient then, and I your personal nurse for the week I'm with you. Marta West felt suddenly cold. In the turmoil of the day, she had forgotten the plans. Nurse Ansel was to be with them for a week. It was all arranged. The vital thing was not to show fear. Nothing must seem changed. And then, when Jim arrived, she would tell him everything. If he could not see the snake's head as she did, and indeed it was possible that he would not, if her hypervision was caused by the lenses, he must just understand that for reasons too deep to explain, she no longer trusted Nurse Ansel, could not, in fact, bear her to come home. The plan must be altered. She wanted no one to look after her. She only wanted to be home again, with him. The telephone rang on the bedside table, and Marta West seized it as she might seize salvation. It was her husband. "Sorry to be late," he said. "I'll jump into a taxi and be with you right away. The lawyer kept me." "Lawyer?" she asked. "Yes. Forbes and Millwall. You remember about the trust fund?" She had forgotten. There had been so many financial discussions before the operation. Conflicting advice as usual, and finally Jim had put the whole business into the hands of the Forbes and Millwall people. "Oh, yes. Was it satisfactory?" "I think so. Tell you directly." He rang off, and looking up, she saw the snake's head watching her. "No doubt," thought Marta West, "no doubt you would like to know what we were saying to one another. You must promise not to get too excited when Mr. West comes." Nurse Ansel stood with her hand upon the door. "I'm not excited. I just long to see him, that's all." "You're looking very flushed. It's warm in here." The twisting neck craned upward, then turned to the window. For the first time, Marta West had the impression that the snake was not entirely at its ease. It sensed tension. It knew, it could not help but know, that the atmosphere had changed between nurse and patient. "I'll open the window just a trifle at the top." "If you were all snake," thought the patient, "I could push you through. Or would you coil yourself around my neck and strangle me?" The window was open, and pausing a moment, hoping perhaps for a word of thanks, the snake hovered at the end of the bed. Then the neck settled in the collar, the tongue darted rapidly in and out, and with a gliding motion, Nurse Ansel left the room. Marta West waited for the sound of the taxi in the street outside. She wondered if she could persuade Jim to stay the night in the nursing home. If she explained her fear, her terror, surely he would understand. She would know in an instant if he had sensed anything wrong himself. She would ring the bell, make a pretext of asking Nurse Ansel some question, and then by the expression on his face, by the tone of his voice, she would discover whether he saw what she saw herself. The taxi came at last. She heard it slow down, and then the door slammed, and blessedly, Jim's voice rang out in the street below. The taxi went away. He would be coming up in the lift. Her heart began to beat fast, and she watched the door. She heard his footsteps outside, and then his voice again. He must be saying something to the snake. She would know at once if he had seen the head. He would come into the room, either startled, not believing his eyes, or laughing, declaring it a joke, a pantomime. Why did he not hurry? Why must they linger there, talking, their voices hushed? The door opened, the familiar umbrella, the bowler hat, the first objects to appear around the corner, then the comforting, burly figure, but God, no. Please God, not Jim too. Not Jim. Forced into a mask, forced into an organization of devils, of liars, Jim had a vulture's head. She could not mistake it. The brooding eye, the blood-tipped beak, the flabby folds of flesh. As she lay in sick and speechless horror, he stood the umbrella in a corner and put down the bowler hat and the folded overcoat. I gather you're not too well, he said, turning the vulture's head and staring at her. Feeling a bit sick and out of sorts, I won't stay long. A good night's rest will put you right. She was too numb to answer. She lay quite still as he approached the bed and bent to kiss her. The vulture's beak was sharp. Its reaction, Nurse Ansel says, he went on. The sudden shock of being able to see again. It works differently with different people. She says it will be much better when we get you home. Nurse Ansel and Jim, the plan still held then? I don't know, she said faintly, that I want Nurse Ansel to come home. Not want Nurse Ansel? He sounded startled. But it was you who suggested it. You can't suddenly chop and change. There was no time to reply, but she had not rung the bell, but Nurse Ansel herself came into the room. "Cup of coffee, Mr. West," she said. It was the evening routine, yet tonight it sounded strange, as it had been arranged outside the door. "Thanks, Nurse, I'd love some. What's this nonsense about not coming home with us?"
The vulture turned to the snake. The snake's head wiggled, and Marta West knew as she watched them. The snake, with darting tongue, the vulture with his head hunched between his man's shoulder, that the plan for Nurse Ansel to come home had not been her own, after all. She remembered now that the first suggestion had come from Nurse Ansel herself. It had been Nurse Ansel who had said that Marta West needed care during convalescence. The suggestion had come after Jim had spent the evening laughing and joking, and his wife had listened, her eyes bandaged, happy to hear him. Now watching the smooth snake, whose adder's V was hidden beneath the nurse's cap, she knew why Nurse Ansel wanted to return with her. And she knew, too, why Jim had not opposed it. Why, in fact, had accepted the plan at once, had declared it a good one. The vulture opened its blood-stained beak. "Don't say you two have fallen out." "Impossible." The snake twisted its neck, looked sideways at the vulture, and he sighed. "Mrs. West is just a little bit tired tonight. She's had a trying day, haven't you, dear?" How best to answer? Neither must know. Neither the vulture nor the snake, nor any of the hooded beasts surrounding her and closing in, must ever guess, must never know. "I'm all right," she said. "A bit mixed up, as Nurse Ansel says. I'll be better in the morning." The two communicated in silence. Sympathy between them, that she realized now, was the most frightening thing of all. Animals, birds, and reptiles had no need to speak. They moved, they looked, they knew what they were about. They would not destroy her, though. She had, for all her bewildered terror, the will to live. "I won't bother you," said the vulture, "with these documents tonight. There's no violent hurry anyway. You can sign them at home." "What documents?" If she kept her eyes averted, she need not see the vulture's head. The voice was Jim, steady and reassuring. "The trust fund papers for Forbes and Millwall. They gave them to me. They suggest I should become a co-director of the fund." The word struck a chord, a thread of memory, belonging to the weeks before operation. Something to do with her eyes. If the operation was not successful, she would have difficulty in signing her name. "What for?" she asked, her voice unsteady. "After all, it is my money." He laughed, and turning to the sound, she saw the beak open. It gaped like a trap, and then closed again. "Of course it is," he said. "That's not the point. The point is that I should be able to sign for you, if you should be ill or away." Marta West looked at the snake, and the snake, aware, shrank into its collar and slid towards the door. "Don't stay too long, Mr. West," murmured Nurse Ansel. "Our patient must have a rest tonight." She glided from the room, and Marta West was left alone with her husband, with a vulture. "I don't propose to go away," she said, "or be ill." "Probably not. That's neither here nor there. These fellows always want safeguards. Anyway, I won't bore you with it now." Could it be that the voice was over-casual? That the hand stuffing the document into the pocket of the greatcoat was a claw? This was a possibility, a horror perhaps to come. The bodies changing too, hands and feet becoming wings, claws, hoofs, paws, with no touch of humanity left to the people about her. The last thing to go would be the human voice. When the human voice went, there would be no hope. The jungle would take over. Multitudinous sounds and screams coming from 100 throats. "Did you really mean that?" Jim asked. "About Nurse Ansel?" Calmly she watched the vulture pare his nails. He carried a file in his pocket. She had never thought about it before. It was part of Jim, like his fountain pen and his pipe. Yet now, there was reasoning behind it. A vulture needed sharp claws for tearing its victims. "I don't know," she said. "It seemed to be rather silly to go home with a nurse, now that I can see again." He did not answer at once. The head sank deeper between the shoulders. His dark city suit was like the humped feathers of a large brooding bird. "I think she's a treasure," he said, "and you're bound to feel groggy at first. I vote that we stick to the plan. After all, if it doesn't work, we can always send her away." "Perhaps," said his wife. She was trying to think if there was anyone left whom she could trust. Her family was scattered, a married brother in South Africa, friends in London, no one with whom she was intimate, not to this extent. No one to whom she could say that her nurse had turned into a snake, her husband into a vulture. The utter hopelessness of her position was like damnation itself. This was her hell. She was quite alone, coldly conscious of the hatred and cruelty about her. "What will you do this evening?" she asked quietly. "Have dinner at the club, I suppose," he answered. "It's becoming rather monotonous. Only 2 more days of it, thank goodness. Then you'll be home again." "Yes, but once at home, once back there with a vulture and a snake,
Would she not be more completely at their mercy than she was here? Did Grieve say Thursday for certain? She asked. He told me so this morning, when he telephoned. You'll have the other lenses then, the ones that show color. The ones that would show the bodies too? That was the explanation. The blue lenses only showed the heads. They were the first test. Grieves, the surgeon, was in this too. Very naturally. He had a high place in the conspiracy. Perhaps he had been bribed. Who was it, she tried to remember, who had suggested the operation in the first place? Was it the family doctor after a chat with Jim? Didn't they both come to her together and say that this was the only chance to save her eyes? The plot must lie deep in the past, extend right back through the months, perhaps the years. But in heaven's name, for what purpose? She sought wildly in her memory to try to recall a look or sign or word which would give her some insight into this dreadful plot, this conspiracy against her person or her sanity. You look pretty peaky, he said suddenly. Shall I call Nurse Ansel? No. It broke from her almost a cry. I think I'd better go. She said not to stay long. He got up from the chair, a very heavy hooded figure, and she closed her eyes as he came to her to kiss goodnight. Sleep well, my poor pet, and take it easy. In spite of her fear, she felt herself clutch at his hand. What is it? He asked. The well-remembered kiss would have restored her, but not the stab of the vulture's beak. The thrusting, blood-stained beak. When he had gone, she began to moan, turning her head upon the pillow. What am I to do? She said. What am I to do? The door opened again, and she put her hand to her mouth. They must not hear her cry. They must not see her cry. She pulled herself together with a tremendous effort. How are you feeling, Mrs. West? The snake stood at the bottom of the bed. By her side, the house physician. She had always liked him, a young, pleasant man, and although, like the others, he had an animal's head, it did not frighten her. It was a dog's head, an Aberdeen's, and the brown eyes seemed to quiz her long ago. As a child, she had owned an Aberdeen. Could I speak to you alone? She asked. Of course. Do you mind, nurse? He jerked his head at the door, and she had gone. Margaret West sat up in bed and clasped her hands. You'll think me very foolish, she began, but it's the lenses. I can't get used to them. He came over, this trustworthy Aberdeen, head cocked in sympathy. I'm sorry about that, he said. They don't hurt you, do they? No, she said, no. I can't feel them. It's just that they make everyone look strange. They're bound to do that, you know. They don't show color, his voice was cheerful, friendly. It comes as a bit of a shock when you've worn bandages so long, he said. And you mustn't forget, you were pulled about quite a bit. The nerves behind the eyes are still very tender. Yes, she said. His voice, even his head, even her confidence. Have you known people who've had this operation before? Yes, scores of them. In a couple of days, you'll be as right as rain. He patted her on the shoulder. Such a kindly dog. Such a sporting, cheerful dog, like the long-dead Angus. I'll tell you another thing, he continued. Your sight may be better after this than it's ever been before. You'll actually see more clearly in every way. One patient told me that it was as though she had been wearing spectacles all her life, and then, because of the operation, she realized she saw our friends and her family as they really were. As they really were? She repeated her words after him. Exactly. Her sight had always been poor, you see. She had thought her husband's hair was brown, but in reality it was bright, bright red. A bit of a shock at first, but she was delighted. The Aberdeen moved from the bed, patted the stethoscope on his jacket, and nodded his head. Mr. Grieves did a wonderful job on you. I can promise you that. He said he was able to strengthen a nerve he thought had perished. You've never had the use of it before. It wasn't functioning. So who knows, Mrs. West? You may have made medical history. Anyway, sleep well and the best of luck. See you in the morning. Good night. He trotted from the room. She heard him call good night to Nurse Ansel as he went down the corridor. The comforting words had turned to gall. In one sense, they were relief because his explanation seemed to suggest there was no plot against her. Instead, like the woman patient before her, with a deepened sense of color, she had been given vision. She used the words he had used himself. Marta West could see people as they really were, and those whom she had loved and trusted most were in truth a vulture and a snake. The door opened, and Nurse Ansel, with a sedative, into the room. Ready to settle down, Mrs. West? She asked. Yes, thank you. There might be no conspiracy. Even so, all trust, all faith were over. Leave it with a glass of water. I'll take it later. She watched the snake put the glass on the bedside table. She watched her tuck in the sheets, then the twisting neck, peered closer, and the hooded eyes saw
the nail scissors half hidden beneath the pillow. "What have you got there?" The tongue, Darden withdrew, the hand stretched out for the scissors. "You might have cut yourself, or put them away, shall I, for safety's sake?" Her one weapon was pocketed, not replaced, on the dressing table. The very way Nurse Ansel slipped the scissors into her pocket suggested that she knew of Marta West's suspicions. She wanted to leave her defenseless. "Now remember to ring your bell if you want anything." "I'll remember." The voice that had once seemed tender was over-smooth and false. How deceptive our ears, thought Marta West, but traitors to truth. And for the first time, she became aware of her own new latent power. The power to tell truth from falsehood. Good from evil. "Good night, Mrs. West." "Good night." Lying awake, her bedside clock ticking, the accustomed traffic sounds coming from the street outside, Marta West decided upon her plan. She waited until 11 o'clock, an hour past the time, when she knew that all the patients were settled and asleep. Then she switched out her light. This would deceive the snake, should she come to peep at her through the window slide in the door. The snake would believe that she slept. Marta West crept out of bed. She took her clothes from the wardrobe and began to dress. She put on her coat and shoes and tied a scarf over her head. When she was ready, she went to the door and softly turned the handle. All was quiet in the corridor. She stood there motionless, then she took one step across the threshold and looked to the left, where the nurse on duty sat. The snake was there. The snake was sitting crouched over a book. The light from the ceiling shone upon her head, and there could be no mistake. There were the trim uniform, the white starched front, the stiff collar, but rising from the collar, the twisting neck of the snake, the long, flat, evil head. Marta West waited. She was prepared to wait for hours. Presently, the sound she hoped for came, the bell from a patient. The snake lifted its head from the book and checked the red light on the wall. Then, slipping on her cuffs, she glided down the corridor to the patient's room. She knocked and entered. Directly she had disappeared, Marta West left her own room and went to the head of the staircase. There was no sound. She listened carefully and then crept downstairs. There were four flights, four floors, but the stairway itself was not visible from the cubbyhole where the night nurses sat on duty. Luck was with her. Down in the main hall, the lights were not so bright. She went at the bottom of the stairway until she was certain of not being observed. She could see the night porter's back. His head was not visible, for he was bent over his desk, but when it straightened, she noticed the broad fish face. She shrugged her shoulders. She had not dared all this way to be frightened by a fish. Boldly, she walked through the hall. The fish was staring at her. "Do you want anything, madam?" he said. He was as stupid as he expected. She shook her head. "I'm going out. Good night," she said, and she walked straight past him, out of the swing doors and down the steps into the street. She turned swiftly to the left, and seeing a taxi at the farther end, called and raised her hand. The taxi slowed and she waited. When she came to the door, she saw that the driver had the squat black face of an ape. The ape grinned. Some instinct warned her not to take the taxi. "I'm sorry," she said. "I made a mistake." The grin vanished from the face of the ape. "Make up your mind, lady," he shouted, and let in his clutch and swerved away. Marta West continued walking down the street. She turned right and left, then right again. And in the distance, she saw the lights of Oxford Street. She began to hurry. The friendly traffic drew her like a magnet. The distant lights, the distant men and women. When she came to Oxford Street, she paused, wondering all of a sudden where she should go, whom should she ask for refuge. And it came to her at once again that there was no one, no one at all, because the couple, passing her now a toad's head on a short black body, clutching a panther's arm, could give her no protection. And the policeman standing at the corner was a baboon, the woman talking to him a little pinked-up pig. No one was human. No one was safe. The man, a pace or two behind her, was like Jim, another vulture. There were vultures on the pavement opposite, coming towards her. Laughing was a jackal. She turned and ran. She ran, bumping into them, jackals, hyenas, vultures, dogs. The world was theirs. There was no human left. Seeing her run, they turned and looked at her. They pointed, they screamed, and yapped. They gave chase. Their footsteps followed her. Down Oxford Street she ran, pursued by them, the night all darkness and shadow. The light no longer with her, alone in an animal world. "Lie still, Mrs. West, just a small prick. I'm not going to hurt you." She recognized the voice of Mr. Greaves, the surgeon. Dimly she told herself that they had got hold of her again. She was back at the nursing home, and it did not matter now. She might as well be there as anywhere else. At least in the nursing home, the animal heads were known. They had replaced the bandages over her eyes, and for this she was thankful. Such blessed darkness, the evil of the night hidden. "Now, Mrs. West, I think your troubles are over. No pain and no confusion with these lenses. The world's in color again." The bandages were being lightened after all. Layer after layer removed, and suddenly everything was clear, was day, and the face of Mr. Greaves smiled down at her. At his side was a rounded, cheerful nurse. "Where are your masks?" asked the patient. "We didn't need masks for this little job," said the surgeon. "We're only taking out the temporary lenses. That's better, isn't it?" She let her eyes drift round the room. She was back again, all right. This was the shape. There was the wardrobe, the dressing table, the vases of flowers, all in natural color, no longer veiled. But they could not fob her off with stories of a dream. The scarf she had put round her head before slipping away in the night lay on the chair. "Something happened to me, didn't it?" she said. "I tried to get away." The nurse glanced at the surgeon. He nodded his head. "Yes," he said, "you did. And frankly, I don't blame you. I blame myself. Those lenses I inserted yesterday were pressing upon a tiny nerve, and the pressure threw out your balance. That's all over now." His smile was reassuring in the large warm eyes of Nurse Brand. A surely be Nurse Brand gazed down at her in sympathy. "It was very terrible," said the patient. "I can never explain how terrible." "Don't try," said Mr. Greaves. "I can promise you it won't happen again." The door opened, and the young physician entered. He, too, was smiling. "Patient fully restored?" he asked. "I think so," said the surgeon. "What about it, Mrs. West?" Marta West stared gravely at the three of them, Mr. Greaves, the house physician, and Nurse Brand, and she wondered what palpitating wounded tissue could so transform three individuals into prototypes of an animal kingdom, what cell linking muscle to imagination. "I thought you were dogs," she said. "I thought you were a hunter terrier, Mr. Greaves, and that you were an Aberdeen." The house physician touched his stethoscope and laughed. "But I am," he said. "It's my native town. Your judgment was not wholly out, Mrs. West. I congratulate you." Marta West did not join in the laugh. "That's all right for you," she said. "Other people were not so pleasant." She turned to Nurse Brand. "I thought you were a cow," she said, "a kind cow, but you had sharp horns." This time it was Mr. Greaves who took up the laugh. "There you are, nurse," he said. "Just what I've often told you. Time they put you out to grass and to eat the daisies." Nurse Brand took it in good part. She straightened the patient's pillow and her smile was benign. "We get called some funny things from time to time," she said. "That's all part of our job." The doctors moving towards the door, still laughing, and Marta West, sensing the normal atmosphere, the absence of all strain, said, "Who found me then? What happened? Who brought me back?" Mr. Greaves glanced back at her from the door. "You didn't get very far, Mrs. West, and a damn good job for you, or you mightn't be here now. The porter followed you." "It's all finished with now," said the house physician, "and the episode lasted 5 minutes. You were safely in your bed before any harm was done, and I was here. So that was that. The person who really had the full shock was poor Nurse Ansel when she found you weren't in your bed." "Nurse Ansel?" The revulsion of the night before was not so easily forgotten. "Don't say our little starlet was an animal too?" smiled the house doctor. Marta West felt herself color. Lies would have to begin. "No," she said quickly. "No, of course not." "Nurse Ansel is here now," said Nurse Brown. "She was so upset when she went off duty that she wouldn't go back to the hostel to sleep. Would you care to have a word with her?" Apprehension seized the patient. What had she said to Nurse Ansel in the panic and fever of the night? Before she could answer, the house doctor opened the door and called down the passage. "Mrs. West wants to say good morning to you," he said. He was smiling all over his face. Mr. Greaves waved his hand and was gone. Nurse Brand went after him. The house doctor, saluting with his stethoscope and making a mock bow, stepped back against the wall to admit Nurse Ansel. Marta West stared, then tremulously began to smile and held out her hand. "I'm sorry," she said. "You must forgive me." How could she have seen Nurse Ansel as a snake? The hazel eyes, the clear olive skin, the dark hair, trim under the frilled cap, and that smile, that slow, understanding smile. "Forgive you, Mrs. West," said Nurse Ansel. "What have I to forgive you for? You've been through a terrible ordeal," and patient and nurse held hands. They smiled at one another, and oh heaven, thought Marta West. The relief, the thankfulness, the load of doubt and despair that was swept away with a newfound sight and knowledge. "I still don't understand what happened," she said, clinging to the nurse. "Mr. Greaves tried to explain something about a nerve." Nurse Ansel made a face towards the door. "He doesn't know himself," she whispered, "and he's not going to say either, or he'll find himself in trouble. He fixed those lenses too. Deep, that's all. Too near a nerve. I wonder it didn't kill you." She looked down at her patient. She smiled with her eyes. She was so pretty, so gentle. "Don't think about it," she said. "You're going to be happy from now on. Promise me?" "I promise," said Marta West. The telephone rang and Nurse Ansel let go her patient's hand and reached for the receiver. "You know who this is going to be," she said. "Your poor husband." She gave the receiver to Marta West. "Jim? Jim, is that you?" The love voice sounded so anxious at the other end. "Are you all right?" he said. "I've been through to Matron twice. She said she would let me know. What the devil has been happening?" Marta West smiled and handed the receiver to the nurse. "You tell him," she said. Nurse Ansel held the receiver to her ear. The skin of her hand was olive smooth, the nails gleaming with a soft pink polish. "Is that you, Mr. West?" she said. "Our patient gave us a fright, didn't she?" She smiled and nodded as the woman in the bed. "Well, you don't have to worry anymore," Mr. Greaves changed the lenses. "They were pressing on a nerve, and everything is now all right." "She can see perfectly, yes," Mr. Greaves said. "We should come home tomorrow." The endearing voice blended to the soft coloring, the hazel eyes. Marta West reached once more for the receiver. "Jim, I had a hideous night," she said. "I'm only just beginning to understand it now. A nerve in the brain." "So I gather," he said. "How damnable. Thank God they traced it. That fellow Greaves can't have known his job." "It can't happen again," she said. "Now the proper lens are in. It can't happen again." "I'd better not," he said, "or I'll sue him. How are you feeling in yourself?" "Wonderful," she said. "Bewildered, but wonderful." "Good girl," he said. "Don't excite yourself. I'll be along later." His voice went. Marta West gave the receiver to Nurse Ansel, who replaced it on the stand. "Did Mr. Greaves really say I could go home tomorrow?" she asked. "Yes, if you're good," Nurse Ansel smiled and patted her patient's hand. "Are you sure you still want me to come with you?" she asked. "Why, yes," said Marta West. "Why? It's all arranged." She sat up in bed and the sun came streaming through the window, throwing light on the roses, the lilies, the tall-stemmed irises. The hum of traffic outside was closed and friendly. She thought of her garden waiting for her at home, and her own bedroom, her own possessions, the day-by-day routine of home to be taken up again, with sight restored, the anxiety and fear of the past months put away forever. "The most precious thing in the world," she said to Nurse Ansel, "is sight. I know now. I know what I might have lost." Nurse Ansel, hands clasped in front of her, nodded her head in sympathy. "You've got your sight back," she said. "That's the miracle. You won't ever lose it now." She moved to the door. "I'll slip back to the hostel and get some rest," she said. "Now I know everything is well with you. I'll be able to sleep. Is there anything you want before I go?" "Give me my face cream and my powder," said the patient, "and the lipstick and the brush and comb." Nurse Ansel fetched the things from the dressing table and put them within reach upon the bed. She brought the Hanan Meritu and the bottle of scent, and with a little smile of intimacy, sniffed at the stopper. "This is what Mr. West gave you, isn't it?" Already, thought Marta West, Nurse Ansel fitted in. She saw herself putting flowers in the small guest room, choosing the right books, fitting portable wireless in case Nurse Ansel should be bored in the evenings. "I'll be with you at 8 o'clock. The familiar words said every morning now, for so many days and weeks, sounded in her ear like a melody loved through repetition. At last they were joined to the individual, the person who smiled, the one whose eyes promised friendship and loyalty. "See you this evening." The door closed. Nurse Ansel had gone. The routine of the nursing home, broken by the fever of the night before, resumed its usual pattern. Instead of darkness, light. Instead of negation, life. Marta West took the stopper from the scent bottle and put it behind her ears. The fragrance filtered, becoming part of the warm, bright day. She lifted the hand mirror and looked into it. Nothing changed in the room. The street noises penetrated from outside, and presently the little maid, who had seemed a weasel yesterday, came in to dust the room. She said good morning, but the patient did not answer. Perhaps she was tired. The maid dusted and went her way. Then Marta West took up the mirror and looked into it once more. No, she had not been mistaken. The eyes that stared back at her were doe's eyes. Wary before sacrifice, and the timid deer's head was meek. Already bowed.